Good morning, everyone. I hereby call this meeting to order. All the representatives of the commission are present. I am Lieutenant Governor Eleni Kounalakis. I'm joined today by Deputy Controller Christina Kunkel, Commissioner Alternate for State Controller Cohen, and Gail Miller, representing the Department of Finance. Ms. Lucchesi?
Yes, Madam Chair, we do have a quorum present. In addition, I'd like to identify members of the staff of the commission participating virtually for this hybrid meeting. Our Zoom co-hosts are Mike Farina, Grace Cotto, Michelle Pelka, and Luke Ward.
Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchesi. For the benefit of those in the audience, the State Lands Commission manages state property interests in over 5 million acres of land, including mineral interests. The commission also has responsibility for the prevention of oil spills at marine oil terminals and offshore oil platforms and islands, and for preventing the introduction of marine invasive species into California's marine waters. Today, we will hear requests and presentations involving the lands and resources within the commission's jurisdiction. I want to take a moment to acknowledge and express gratitude for the Kumeyaay people on whose lands this meeting is being held. For millennia, the Kumeyaay have maintained a constant presence on the landscape, living on this coast and fishing in these waters in a relationship of balance and reciprocity. The Commission takes seriously its trust relationship with these sovereign governments and recognize that California's Native people are essential stewardship partners of this state's lands and resources. I also want to take a moment to honor the California Native American communities all across the state for persisting, carrying on diverse cultural and linguistic traditions, and sustainably managing the land that we now share. Native people have maintained a constant presence on the landscape for many thousands of years, and they are essential stewardship partners, whether along the coast, along our rivers and valleys, or in our fragile deserts. We thank California Native American communities for participating in this commission's activities and for their essential role in maintaining and adding to our state's rich cultural legacy. Ms. Lucchesi, I understand we have some agenda changes for today. I will turn it over to you to explain these changes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, we will next go into my executive officer's report, where we'll hear a presentation and hear from folks on the Tijuana River pollution crisis. And from there, we'll adjourn into closed session. And when we return from closed session, we'll take up our regularly scheduled program, the regular agenda. So with that, I'll turn it back to you. Yes, certainly. Thank you so much. I will make it very brief. I just want to express my gratitude to the Port of San Diego for hosting us today for our State Lands Commission. And in the interest of time, I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Katie Robinson Phillip, who will give our presentation on the Tijuana River pollution crisis. And so with that, Katie will be presenting virtually on Zoom. Katie?
Thank you, Jennifer. And then I also just wanted to note for those attending virtually, the Lieutenant Governor's microphone isn't working, so I was unable to hear anything that happened just now. So I just wanted to point that out. Thank you. And I'll begin my presentation now.
I didn't turn. Okay. Sorry.
Perfect. We can hear you now. Thank you.
All right. Great.
There's a PowerPoint presentation to pull up, and I will begin now. So my name is Katie Robinson Phillip. I'm an environmental scientist with State Lands Commission, and I just want to say hello and thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I'd like to provide an update on the transboundary pollution crisis in the Tijuana River Valley. Specifically, I will provide a brief overview of the background of the crisis, highlight ongoing and emerging concerns related to public access and health, and identify actions and next steps to address the issue. Next slide, please. Nearly three quarters of the Tijuana River watershed is in Mexico, but it drains the Pacific Ocean through the 8 square mile Tijuana River Valley north of the border in Imperial Beach. The Tijuana River Valley is a natural floodplain with tidally flushed wetland and riparian areas that support threatened and endangered species and includes several federally listed historical and archaeological sites. The area includes a tidal saltwater estuary at the mouth of the Tijuana River and sandy beaches along the Pacific shoreline in the west. Due to urban development, industrial activity, and inadequate storm and wastewater treatment infrastructure, the region experiences water quality issues and pollution, including sediment, trash, contaminated wastewater, and untreated sewage flowing into it, especially during large storm events, which cause additional strain on the already stressed water treatment centers. This transboundary pollution impacts water quality along the San Diego County coast, especially in Imperial Beach and Coronado. Next slide, please. The commission has jurisdiction over tide and submerged lands located in and near Tijuana River watershed. The commission leases tide and submerged lands in the Tijuana River estuary to the California Department of Parks and Recreation for the Border Field State Park and to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for the Tijuana River National Estuarine Research Reserve. The City of San Diego and the U.S. section of the International Boundary and Water Commission lease tide and submerged lands in the Pacific Ocean for an outfall associated with the South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant. The Tijuana River watershed is regulated by various agencies. The U.S. International Boundary and Water Commission is a binational agency that oversees water treaties between the United States and Mexico. The San Diego Regional Water Quality Control Board administers water quality laws, including the Clean Water Act. The U.S. EPA has a border office focused on issues related to the Tijuana River Valley. And the City of Imperial Beach, County of San Diego, and City of San Diego operate the Valley's treatment plan and do most of the monitoring associated with it. There are also several international agreements that regulate water management along the United States-Mexico border. Next slide, please. This map outlines the existing storm and wastewater treatment infrastructure within the Tijuana River Valley. Many of the pump stations, collectors, and treatment stations are either in disrepair due to lack of proper maintenance and continued exposure to overflows, or they simply do not have the capacity to process the transboundary flows, especially during wet seasons. You'll notice that this system of infrastructure spans across the border, emphasizing the complexity and scale of the issue as one of binational importance. Next slide, please. During the wet season and storm events, infrastructure frequently becomes overwhelmed, failing to treat the increased flows, leading to untreated flows of sewage, debris, and sediment across the border and through the Tijuana River estuary, exiting into the Pacific Ocean in the city of Imperial Beach. Next slide, please. These transboundary flows significantly impact the nearby coastal communities and habitats. For example, the main beach in Imperial Beach has been closed for the majority of the last 2 years due to excessive and unsafe levels of bacteria from untreated sewage flows, which pose a health risk to the public, is a critical environmental justice issue. During periods of transboundary flows, air quality is also impacted as bacteria and pollutants are aerosolized. Affected communities experience increases in gastrointestinal issues and lung issues, as well as impacts on mental health. This pollution not only affects public health, but also limits public beach access and results in economic consequences linked to decreased recreation and tourism. Next slide, please. The Commission has remained actively involved in calling attention to the crisis and advocating for action. The Commission and its staff have provided comments on the environmental review of infrastructure projects, advocated and supported legislation to direct funding and resources towards addressing the crisis, and in April 2022, was part of a coalition of government agencies and clean water advocates in reaching a settlement with the U.S. section of the International Boundary and Water Commission on cross-border water pollution in Tijuana River Valley. The commission had joined San Diego Regional Water Quality Controls Board action on December 13, 2018, alleging that the International Boundary and Water Commission's failure to address transboundary pollution violated the Clean Water Act. Other plaintiffs, including the San Diego Unified Port District, the cities of Imperial Beach, Chula Vista, and San Diego, and Surfrider Foundation, also filed claims against the International Boundary and Water Commission. In exchange for the dismissal of the lawsuits, the International Boundary and Water Commission agreed to improve its canyon collector network, support a main channel berm, improve its stakeholder communication, and take other steps to address pollution that flows across the border. Next slide, please. Recent actions to address the crisis include Congress passing the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement Implementation Act in January 2020, which resulted in the appropriation of $300 million to the US EPA to address the issue. Also, through the United States-Mexico-Canada Agreement and the International Boundary and Water Commission, Mexico committed to fund and implement wastewater collection and treatment projects in Tijuana. In 2021 and 2022, the California Budget Acts allocated $35 million for border water quality improvement projects. The State Water Boards has announced 6 projects planned along the Tijuana and New River from these funds. And in November 2022, the US EPA and International Boundary and Water Commission released a programmatic environmental impact statement for projects to improve infrastructure. The record of decision was signed in June 2023. Next slide, please. The record of decision identifies the actions that the US EPA and International Boundary and Water Commission seek to implement. These include core projects to expand the South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant, manage Tijuana Canyon flows to the International Wastewater Treatment Plant, implement Tijuana sewer repairs, and build an advanced primary treatment plant. Additional supplemental projects were also identified and included in the record of decision. However, many of these projects will require additional environmental review and funding that has not yet been secured. Next slide, please. It is important to iterate that to fully implement the core and supplemental projects in the record of decision, more resources and funding are required to complete additional environmental analysis and implement project designs. Additionally, more funding will be needed to operate, maintain, and repair infrastructure across both borders. There is also a critical need for research to better understand the full scale of impacts on public health and biological resources. It is also important to identify immediate strategies to help mitigate the ongoing health impacts. Next slide, please. There are many ongoing efforts led by a variety of federal, state, local, and international groups to address these pollution issues. The Commission engages with partners at all levels to raise awareness for and identify ways to address the transboundary pollution crisis. Next slide, please. And with that, I would like to thank you. This concludes my update on the transboundary pollution crisis in Tijuana River Valley as part of the Executive Officer update. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Ms. Lucchese. And thank you, Ms. Robinson Phillip, for that thorough and helpful presentation. We are very fortunate to have a real expert and activist whose leadership on this issue is absolutely critical at this time, and she's here joining us. It is the mayor of the city of Imperial Beach, Mayor Aguirre. Am I saying that right? I've heard people say your name a couple of different
Aguirre.
Ways. Aguirre.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, it's wonderful to have you here before the State Lands Commission. It was wonderful to be with you last week for 2 days down in your city and to see firsthand again for me what you're dealing with. And thank you for being here for my colleagues on State Lands, but also for the public who follows us to hear what is going on down there from your expert perspective. So please.
Thank you so much. I believe I have a PowerPoint. There it is. Madam Chair, thank you so much for the invitation. Honorable members of the commission, Executive Officer Lucchese, thank you for inviting me. Thank you for coming and spending 2 days in Imperial Beach. It's not the first time you've been. You've toured the area before. You've been very engaged. You were very knowledgeable on the issue. And we're very grateful for your leadership and also your leadership during the litigation that actually prompted us securing the $300 million through the USMCA agreement. I just want to give the perspective from the city of Imperial Beach of how severe this crisis is affecting us now. We are in a full state of emergency. The state of emergency was declared by the city of Imperial Beach, the city of San Diego, and now the county of San Diego as well. Next slide, please. I just want to talk about all of the different types of impacts to our city. Primarily, the economic impacts are quite severe. It's very challenging to, quantify loss of revenue, right? And as you can see in the slide, our primary source of income are taxes. Those are franchise tax, property tax, transient occupancy tax, which is related to tourism and visitors, So I wanted to just share a few examples of what types of losses we've suffered. Next slide, please. We used to have events, really major events. For example, Ironman would come to town and it would attract thousands of visitors. Now we are no longer able to host this event because of the beach closures that we've been experiencing. Tourism has been on the decline. Our hotels are reporting a decrease in occupancy, as well as our local mom and pop shops, right? The business you see in the background, Cowabunga, other cafes, they're all suffering because we've seen a very reduced number of visitors to our beaches. Next slide, please. Our local programs have been greatly affected as well. This is the Junior Guard program that is a staple of our community, where kids could come, enroll, and learn life-saving skills, ocean stewardship, and have fun during the summer months at a reduced cost. And that is a significant pipeline to our lifeguards that protect the safety and well-being of our beach goers in Imperial Beach. And that unfortunately had to be canceled because of the beach closures. Next slide, please. And our lifeguards, I just want to highlight how proud I am of them, because they are unlike any other lifeguards in any other city. They face circumstances that no other lifeguards have to face. And I know this is a strong picture, but I just wanted to share it because these are the conditions that they have to face every day. They serve as a very strong partner for the Department of Homeland Security and Border Patrol, especially when it relates to undocumented crossers through the water, through the culverts and the river valley. And every time we're in wet weather, there's flooding and they have to answer the call, and they do it very valiantly and in polluted conditions. Next slide, please. Now I wanted to share something we've never experienced before, which was the boil water advisory that happened on August 24th. It was following Tropical Storm Hillary. We had to shutter all of our businesses for 3 straight days. That was devastating to our local businesses. We never even incurred that situation during COVID. Not to mention, the inability of people to be able to drink from their faucet, and inability of our working families to be able to buy in bulk bottled water. So that was very detrimental to our community. Next slide, please. Now, recently there was a article published in the UT that was very revealing because it confirmed a lot of the anecdotal reports that I get on an ongoing basis from throughout, not just Imperial Beach, but adjacent communities such as Nestor, San Isidro, South San Diego, and Chula Vista, which are very strong odors related to the sewage. Sometimes it can be overwhelming. I live a mile and a half from the beach, 2 miles from the river floodplain. And even last night, I couldn't open my windows or turn on the AC. This article revealed that people started to buy sensors within their homes, and they were finding concentrations that were well above the state thresholds that are in place for safety and well-being. And those types of gases are hydrogen sulfide and sulfur dioxide, which are related to sewage emissions. The Air Pollution Control District also has started a program. They've placed different sensors throughout the River Valley and in Imperial Beach, and that has been funded by the US EPA. And that will help us obtain more data to quantify what types of impacts these odors are having on our community. Next slide, please. And again, you showed the map earlier of the tidelands and jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission. This entire portion that's under the State Lands Commission's jurisdiction has been closed 688 consecutive days. Next slide, please. And something that keeps me up at night, in addition to everything else, is sea level rise. Right. This is a picture of our last coastal flooding event when we had the combination of king tides and a winter storm event, which wasn't as severe. Thankfully, it didn't coincide as as severely as it had in 2018 when we had another event such as this. This is Seacoast Drive. This is in front of people's homes. And as you can see, that is very polluted water. And according to Scripps Institution of Oceanography and their flooding projection levels, San Diego County will be subject to about 100 days per year of this type of flooding. And these types of concerns are unlike any other city has to face. Other cities think about sea level rise. They think about saltwater intrusion in their stormwater and sewage convey systems. We're thinking corrosion and a public health threat. Next slide, please. Not just because of surface runoff, but because of the bacteria, pathogens, and viruses that are being emitted by this sewage pollution. Last week, we met with a few residents that live adjacent to that area where I showed you the picture that reported having been infected with Shigella bacteria and hospitalized. One woman I spoke with spent 3 days in the hospital, and she's still recuperating weeks after the boil water advisory event. Her nurses and medical staff had to enter her room with hazmat suits. Next slide, please. And I already mentioned the state of emergencies that we have declared here. Next slide, please. And, you know, I should have updated the slide, but we did receive a letter, as was presented by staff earlier, from the governor explaining the reasoning behind not declaring the state of emergency. But what we are asking is the governor and the State Lands Commission, the Coastal Commission, and everybody that can help us to call on our president to declare one. And the reason why is because, as was presented earlier, the International Wastewater Treatment Plant is in complete state of disrepair. It has been out of compliance since 2019. You know, it's years and years of deferred maintenance, underfunding. And unfortunately, it can only receive funding from the Department of State's budget. And we're asking for the president to issue a waiver and suspension of statutes so that we can allocate resources to the plant from different sources of funding. And most importantly, allocate immediate funding to the plant so that we could not just fix it, but expand it as fast as possible, because as you can see, we're in a dire situation, not just in Imperial Beach, but in Coronado and all of South Bay. Next slide, please. And that concludes my presentation. I want to thank you for your leadership and for the opportunity to share this information today, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. We also have someone here from the city of the Port of San Diego. So maybe what we'll do is hear from him and then we'll open it up to questions. All right.
Great. Thank you so much. Every time we see those images, they're so vivid. Can't help but move you. But thank you, Chair Kunalakis, commissioners. My name is Jason Giffen, vice president here at the Port of San Diego. So welcome to the port. As a part of your regular programming, you're going to hear from a couple of my colleagues. But I'd like to obviously speak specifically about Tijuana River Valley. The partnership we have with the State Lands Commission is vital for protecting the public trust lands along 34 miles of waterfront and delivering benefits to enrich our region and serve our state. Additionally, we manage granted tide lands and submerged lands in Imperial Beach, notably north and south of the iconic pier. And you saw some of those in the photos just moments ago. Our collaboration with State Lands in this cross-border region is the epicenter of an environmental injustice that our communities continue to endure. We can measure it in days, weeks, months, years, 688, and you know, what'll be 2 years come December 8th, actually, that some of those beaches have been closed in terms of being the recipients of neglect and underinvestment of infrastructure that are required to manage a huge volume of sewage and pollution that flows across federal land through federal facilities under federal into federal areas that ultimately end up at our beaches. And that picture that the mayor showed of Hillary, typically we experience a little over 30 million gallons of flow a day. That was over 80 million gallons. So you can see that essentially is, you know, more than 2.5 times what we would typically see. And with the increase of severity of storms, we anticipate some more of those events. The South Bay International Wastewater Treatment Plant was built 26 years ago, as you've heard, when the population in the Cali Baja region was much smaller, and there's been an enormous amount of growth. However, with the capacity of the plant, it has not increased. In fact, has deteriorated to the point that it must be rehabilitated and money must be put into the deferred maintenance of that facility. Today, transboundary sewage flows impact our communities and the state because this place, natural and economic resources are tied together, as you saw from those earlier pictures. These state lands are why people are here, as they've been here for thousands of years. So when the land is severely impacted and the people feel it, they experience it and they live it. At the beginning of the month, the Port of San Diego went to Washington, D.C. We met with the EPA, also with colleagues at the state, and we met with White House staff, congressional appropriators, urging them to match the scale and magnitude of the crisis by deploying $310 million of emergency funding. The mayor just spoke about the urgency of funding to be deployed immediately as a part of the next supplemental appropriations package. Last week, we also attended the Coastal Commission meetings, and you heard from people like Commissioner Dan Malcolm representing the port, where you dove really deeply into that issue. Lieutenant Governor, we wanted to say thank you very much. We really appreciate your comments that you made there, and thank you for your leadership and holding agencies accountable for what they're responsible in upholding their federal requirements and law and protecting the lives of those who have suffered, not just recently, but for a long time. As trustee of public lands and on behalf of the state of California, the port and the state lands commissions are allies in this fight for environmental and economic health of these lands in terms of protecting our air, land, water, wildlife, and people. And we will see you next month at Coastal Commission up north. So thanks very much.
Thank you so much, Mr. Giffen. Can I ask, do we have anyone to speak on public comment on this issue?
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point in time, we have no hands raised for public comment.
Okay, so I'd like to turn it over for questions and comments to my fellow commissioners. But before I do, let me just say as clearly and as strongly as I possibly can, there is no greater environmental crisis in the state of California right now than the crisis around pollution from the Tijuana River. People are getting sick. Children are getting sick. People are going to the hospital. It is damaging our communities, and it is damaging the wildlife and the environment. It is an utter disaster. And part of the problem, I believe, is that it's hard to conceive that in the state of California, in the United States of America, we would have a catastrophe like this ongoing for years and no one doing anything about it. And I want to just explain, if I can, fellow commissioners, as to how it could be. And Madam Mayor, your presentation was fantastic. If there's one thing I would add to it, it's the topography of the watershed. Because the city of Tijuana, as it abuts the border, sits about 800 feet above sea level. So there is a natural gravitational flow of the Tijuana River as it comes over the border, and it is essentially an open sewer. So we know and have known for a very long time how to manage wastewater, how to manage sewage. But in this case, the facilities that the U.S. government built many years ago are old and they are far below the capacity of what's needed. So we thought 3 years ago when USMCA was passed and our efforts led to $300 million being put into the USMCA agreement to go to the IBWC to build a new sewer treatment plant, we thought we were on our way. Nothing has been built. Nothing has been built, and they're not even ready to break ground. And part of the reason is that the IBWC, which is the agency that has jurisdiction, they have not, in my opinion, moved quickly enough or with enough urgency. And they fall back on this notion that, oh, well, $300 million isn't enough money. So costs have gone up. We understand that. Yes, we have to find the money, but the IBWC has got to move forward, complete the design, the engineering, and we have to do whatever it takes to get the federal funding, because that is the appropriate place for the money to come from to build these facilities. And until then, it is incumbent on every single one of us to recognize the environmental disaster that the Tijuana River issue is presenting to us in the state of California, to our people, and to take every opportunity in every possible way to push the federal government to build the facilities to clean this open sewer system that is draining into the community of Imperial Beach, having impacts on the greater San Diego and Southern California area, and polluting the sea. So with that, I'd like to turn to my colleagues. Commissioner Kunkel, do you have questions or comments?
I'll keep it brief. Chair Kunalakis, I think you said it all. The photos, the presentations were fantastic, but devastating, appalling. I just want to echo you here, Chair Kunalakis, on the need to push for more funding, for federal funding, and thank the advocates that have been working on this environmental injustice issue for years. Mayor Aguirre, I know that you pretty much dedicated your life's work to this, so thank you so much. And thank you to State Lands Commission staff for continued partnership. Those photos were very impactful, and I am a little bit speechless, to be honest. So thank you for the presentation. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Commissioner Kunkel. Commissioner Miller.
Thank you. I do also want to echo the mayor's point about your leadership. It has been since I started here with you. It's really incredible what you've done to bring attention to this issue and to make sure that everyone understands what it means to have a sewer draining into Imperial Beach, and others. Can I just get a little bit of clarity around the $350 million transfer from the federal government and that status? And then is that possible? I know the governor obviously has been very active in trying to make sure that those dollars get put to work. I just want to make sure I fully understand and understand the specifics of what still needs to happen in order to start executing that.
So the original $300 million that were secured through the USMCA, they hit a bit of a roadblock, a bump in the road, if you will, because the money was allocated to USEPA, but it's destined for IBWC. There had to be a legislative fix that was done, I believe, December of last year. The USEPA is the lead agency in the NEPA process, which has been completed. Now, the monies need to be transferred to IBWC, so IBWC can put out a request for proposals for construction, design and construction. As they were doing that analysis is when they identified or revealed that the deferred maintenance and rehabilitation cost had skyrocketed from a couple dozen million to $150 million. So now we're finding out that half of those original $300 million, half of that is going to have to go to fix the plant. Now, there's been a subsequent request supported by the governor and all of our congressional delegation of an additional $310 million through the emergency supplemental bill. And that is where there's a big question mark if it's going to happen or not, given the current state of our Congress. Let's just say that. So many of us have sent letters and are planning on traveling to DC if we're still in time and everything works out, to ask the chair and ranking members of the Appropriations Committee on the House side to include the $310 million into the request so that we can then just at least get back to where we originally were after the litigation, which was expansion of the treatment plan. And I'll just add, lastly, the original $300 million were not enough to fully see significant reduction in beach closure days for our region. So now the estimation that we heard from IBWC is closer to $900 million total. We estimate it's closer to a billion and a half because of inflation and other rates of costs.
Thank you so much. And then in terms of the ability to actually do the building, are those plans completed or is that still what you need?
That's what the bid needs to go out for the design and construction phase that IBWC is now leading.
Got it. Okay. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if it's possible to systematically parse this in stages so that we're not losing any time as we're waiting for this funding to come in. And that's what you're asking for as well, is that we get this bid out immediately. Got it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
To quote the President of the United States, we are the United States of America. We can build a water treatment plant. And there are literally lives at stake right here at home. It is absolutely unacceptable. So thank you, Mayor. Thank you to everyone at the Port of San Diego and across the state, State Lands Commission, and to everyone listening, please help us raise this issue at every level. If the state of California could go in and fix it, I'm sure it would be fixed by now, frankly, particularly with his governor and the fact that he sat on this body for 8 years. But it is a federal issue, and we have tools, but we don't have the ability to actually get in and lead and build the infrastructure. The federal government has to do it. All right. Ms. Lucchesi, what is the next order of business?
Our next order of business is to adjourn into closed session. So Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session, provided that before the closed session, the state body in open session identifies the real property concern and the person or persons with whom the negotiator may negotiate. In accordance with this requirement, I announce that the commission will conference in closed session with its real property negotiators regarding entering into a lease amendment or other agreement for the extended use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters offshore Santa Barbara County. The negotiations will be conducted with ExxonMobil.
Thank you very much. We'll now adjourn into closed session.
Good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting back to order. As you have noticed, the Lieutenant Governor has had to step away, so I will be filling in for her for the rest of today's meeting. So, Ms. Lucchesi, is there anything to report from closed session?
Yes, thank you, Chair Dumlau. So the Commission met in closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 11126, Subdivision C7, which allows a state body to discuss real property negotiations in closed session. We are in negotiations concerning real property located offshore Santa Barbara County relating to the extended use of existing offshore oil and gas pipelines traversing state waters associated with the Santa Ynez unit in federal waters. The negotiations are with ExxonMobil. As such, there is nothing to report out of closed session.
Great, thank you. So next on our agenda, I would like to take this moment to thank the Port of San Diego for hosting us, and also thank them for rolling with the punches today. And as we adjusted our schedule, being willing to come back at a later time. So I would like to welcome Port of San Diego Chair Rafael Castellanos to say a few words. Thank you very much.
Thank you. We've gone pretty good at rolling with the punches here at the Port of San Diego. Welcome, commissioners and Jennifer. We have such a great relationship with you all that we're on a first name basis with Jennifer. Welcome to San Diego and the Port of San Diego. And what we consider one of the most beautiful jewels in all of the state of California, the San Diego Bay and its tidelands, commissioners. As you know, we have many charges under our enacting legislation to balance commerce, navigation, fisheries, recreation, and environmental stewardship. It is tough to balance all of those interests, but we work extremely hard with you in partnership to do exactly that. And we have many great stories to tell about the work that we've done. We do all of it while being a major economic engine for the region. We contribute over $9 billion a year just to our regional economy, almost 70,000 good jobs. For the state of California, it's over $20 billion and over 100,000 good jobs. Our partnership with you is critical. One of the issues that was discussed earlier, the Tijuana River Valley situation, we can't tell you enough how grateful we are for your advocacy, the comments that the Lieutenant Governor made last week to the Coastal Commission, all of the leadership that's been demonstrated in that regard is something that we are extremely grateful for. We're also very grateful for all of your support, allowing us to be a very innovative port. As you know, we adopted a maritime clean air strategy in 2021. It's one of the most aggressive, if not the most aggressive one in the entire country. We are rapidly accelerating all of our working waterfront maritime operations. We like to say that we're a port of firsts. We were one of the first ports to adopt shore power at our cruise and cargo terminals. We were one of the first ports to adopt a climate action plan 10 years ago. We will have the first fully electric tugboat in the entire country coming later this year or the beginning of next year. We're the first port in the entire in all of North America with fully electric mobile harbor cranes, also coming later this year. You will receive an invitation to the media event for that. We hope that you can join us. And we couldn't do any of that without the trust that you have in us, the public trust doctrine under which we both work to make sure that our tidelands here in the San Diego Bay and now the entire Bay Bottom with SB 507, you'll hear more about that later today, that we're working together to ensure that those tidelands remain protected, enhanced for present and future generations. Thank you so much. We welcome you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair Castellanos. Yes, this region is such a beautiful part of the state and incredibly important. This partnership that we have between State Lands Commission and the port and managing all these important resources. And when you think about everything from the military presence to just the beaches, it's incredibly important to the state and the nation. So thank you for all your great work. All right, so moving on, the next item of business will be public comment. Before I open the public comment period for items not on the agenda, first let me thank everyone, especially our stakeholders and members of the public for taking time to join our meeting. Now I want to turn it over to Ms. Lucchesi to quickly share some instructions on how we can best participate in the meeting so that it runs as smoothly as possible.
Thank you, Chair. For public comment, we will take those members of the public who are here in person first, and then hear comments from those members of the public who are participating virtually. If you'd like to speak either during our public, our open public comment period or during a public comment period that is part of an agenda item, please complete an electronic request to speak form available on our website. We will call you in the order in which you submitted the electronic request. For those participating virtually, please make sure you have your microphones or phones muted to avoid background noise. To help us call on you through Zoom, please raise your hand during the appropriate comment section in one of two ways. First, if you're attending on the Zoom platform, please raise your hand in Zoom. If you're new to Zoom and joined our meeting using the Zoom application, you can click on the hand icon at the bottom of your screen. When you click on that hand, it will raise your hand. Second, if you're joining our meeting by phone, you must press *9 on your keypad to raise your hand to make a comment. If you're calling in and want to view the meeting, including the PowerPoint presentations, please view the meeting through the CalSPAN Live webcast link. There will be a slight time delay, but it will avoid an echo or feedback from using your Zoom application and your phone. We'll call you, excuse me, we'll call on individuals who have raised their hands in the order they are raised using the name they registered with or the last three digits of their identifying phone number. After you are called on, you will be unmuted so you can share your comments. Please also remember to unmute your computer or phone and identify yourself. Remember, you have a limit of 3 minutes to speak on an item. Please keep your comments respectful and focused. We will mute anyone who fails to follow those guidelines or at worst dismiss them from the meeting. The commission has also established an email address to compile public comments for our meetings. Its address is cslccommissionmeetings@slc.ca.gov. I have received various emails from parties that have been shared with all the commissioners prior to the meeting. If we receive any emails during the meeting, they will be shared with the commissioners and made available on our website, along with the public comment letters and emails we have already received. Chair Dumlau, that concludes my hybrid meeting instructions, and we're ready to move to the general public comment period.
Thank you. If anyone wants to address the commission on any matter not on today's agenda, I will call on those who are here in person first. You will have 3 minutes to provide your comments, and then we will move on to those joining us virtually. Michelle, please call on the person who would like to make a public, on the first person who would like to make a public comment.
Thank you, Chair. Our first public commenter is Robert Jan Roy Van D. Hook. You may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Are you there?
Hi, my name is Robert Fund. Yes, my name is Robert. Before starting the timer, I just wanted to bring up to you that on comment, Lieutenant Governor spoke on the emergency and asked for public comment, and I raised my hand at that time, so I didn't get to, and then the staff said there was no raised hands, but because it was an emergency, that's how that was set up. And then secondly, after your closed session or prior to your closed session, you were supposed to ask for public comment also, and that wasn't asked for. So I missed two opportunities to speak on public comment, but now I'm ready to speak on general public comment.
May I actually make a comment? I'm sorry, Mr. Vanderhoek, I do think it's really important that we're just clear. I understand you don't like the timer. We appreciate your willingness to come here and comment. I do think it's important that this is this public comment. We just got back from closed session. We reported out. We're now in public comment. There'll be one at the end. There's one after every item. So I think it's always just really important that we're clear on all the ways that we really appreciate public comment at the State Lands Commission. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that this is general public comment. I was not allowed to speak on specific public comment on closed session, and I'm not supposed to use this time to talk on items that are on the agenda, and you added the closed session.
Okay, Mr. Vanderhoek, please proceed with your comment. Here the floor is yours.
All right, well, I'd like to please start my time over at 3 minutes so I can talk on items not on the agenda. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I'm an environmental scientist, and I wish to speak on the Biona wetlands in Los Angeles County, California. The state of California has 60 acres under the State Lands Commission, and then another 600 plus acres under another state agency. Fish and Game Commission and the Department of Fish and Wildlife manages the land there. The State Lands Commission has given its authority on its 60 acres over to the, they've chosen, as you do often throughout the state, you pick a third party to manage your state lands, and you chose the State Department of Fish and Wildlife to do that. And they are now abusing that process in taking to use your 60 acres for a project that they want to do that was under the CEQA and lost in the lawsuit that happened earlier this year. That lawsuit by Superior Court Judge Chalfant directed the Department of Fish and Wildlife to withdraw their EIR essentially and to start over again with a whole CEQA process. And so that means that they can't do anything on your state lands either. And I think it points out that you need to have a full hearing just generally for you, for the three of you commissioners to understand what is going on here. And then you've also 20 years ago plus made an arrangement with Playa Vista Development Corporation to manage some of your lands. And they've been doing a horrible job. And we've pointed that out to you at numerous public comments. And your staff has done a good job in attempting to address that, but there still hasn't been a hearing. And that's the other part of your land that you have under your jurisdiction of the State Lands Commission. So I think that, and as an environmental scientist with a specialty in marine biology and wildlife biology, I just want to rattle off a lot of names of birds and other animals that are being impacted as you move forward. And I don't think you really are aware of that, that that's happening. And also a helpful understanding of public comment, the Kumeyaay Indians who are hosting you, they are a nationally, federally recognized tribe, and you needed to include them in all your discussions related, time's up, you needed to relate them on discussions on everything you're discussing with your emergency and the Port of San Diego, and I don't think you're including that federally recognized tribe. Thank you.
Appreciate your comments today. I think it's Dr. Van der Hoek, if I remember correctly.
No, Professor
Van der Hoek. There we go. Professor Van der Hoek.
Thank you.
Michelle, who is next on our public comment?
Our next public speaker is Marcia Hanscom. Marcia, you may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear.
Great, thank you so much. Marcia Hanscom with Defend Biona Wetlands. And I'm wanting to talk with you about the Biona Wetlands too. And I know some of you are really tired of hearing about it, but you're gonna hear about it until we get things right there. As was discussed a few moments ago, there were four different lawsuits, and they all won in Superior Court. And the judge's order said to rescind the project CEQA findings, to invalidate all approvals, and to decertify the environmental impact report, and prepare certify a legally adequate environmental impact report if the department chooses to proceed. So that's the most important thing. The question is, do we want to proceed with a very controversial 14-year planned, very expensive $200 million project that would do construction, and yes, I say construction, not restoration, on the coast of Los Angeles? I don't think so. We have a gentle restoration plan that really addresses genuine restoration goals. And I hope that you might take a look at it at defendbionawetlands.org. We don't need, in fact, we shouldn't have big, heavy equipment here. This is not San Francisco Bay, where restoration is done a little differently because of the impacts from decades before. This is a habitat that has 8 endangered species now. We had 7. Now the California gnatcatcher is nesting immediately adjacent to your State Lands Commission property. So I would really like to ask that you have a public hearing. In 2008, there was something you passed that says the commission will be a responsible agency under CEQA. And to the extent that any lands under the jurisdiction of the commission are proposed for restoration, the commission, that's you, will have final discretionary authority and approval of the project with respect to lands it owns in fee. That's 60 acres that you own and that you are responsible to the public for. So I would like to ask respectfully that you take back to the people you represent, the state controller and the lieutenant governor, and ask them to ask staff to have a public hearing, maybe the beginning of next year, because Fish and Game, Fish and Wildlife, they're planning on going back to the same old project again. Scoping starts next month. So let's get on a better track. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Hanscom. Michelle, who's the next speaker?
Thank you. Our next speaker is Walter Lamb. Walter, you may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Mr. Lamb?
Yeah, sorry, I was just made a panelist, and so it takes you out of the Zoom for a couple of seconds. I'm back. Thank you very much, Commissioners Walter Lamb, Bino Wetlands Land Trust. Also, not surprisingly, speaking on Biona, I'm going to come at this from a slightly different angle. I know, you know, to the earlier speaker's point, I think people are kind of worn out about Biona, and I understand that, you know, both from the agency perspective and from the stakeholder perspective. There are different opinions about, you know, what should or should not happen at the Biona Wetlands. I think what's relevant for you right now as an agency is you do hold some of these lands in trust. Right? You're not just a responsible agency, you are a trustee agency. I know that you signed a lease in 2005, and there's been some discussion that with the signing of that lease, you kind of leased away your trustee responsibilities. And that I think we all kind of recognize that that's just not how this works, that you still are a trustee agency. Commissioner Miller, I know 2.5 years ago, you were present when the Coastal Conservancy authorized $1.69 million for this project, on top of $6.25 million in 2012, on top of almost $3 million prior to that, for this project continue. And there were a lot of public commenters that raised some concerns, all of which have been validated. And now I believe you may be the alternate on the Wildlife Conservation Board, where this Department of Fish and Wildlife has asked for another $2.8 million. And they're now hoping to just only do two sequences out of 35 starting in 2025, and we don't even think that's realistic. And so I think even discussing the project at this point is kind of moot, because I don't think it's a real thing or a viable thing. I think it's this fantastical thing that we've been hearing about for 20 years. And the problem with that, if we just wanted for the project not to happen, I would tell you that I would just go and do other things, more fun things with my time, because the project is kind of imploded on its own, under its own weight. The problem is there are many issues facing the Biona Wetlands, sea level rise, invasive species, the need for greater public access, all these things that all the agencies have agreed are important. And yet they've put everything, all the chips they've put in this one project that is just going in circles. It just isn't progressing. It's not going forward. And so this $2.8 million that's being requested now, I can tell you at the end of the day, that money's going to get spent and you're just going to have gone around that circle a couple more times. So I think the key theme that you're hearing from a lot of people is that let's not put our heads in the sand and pretend that, you know, we don't have responsibility. We all do. We all have responsibility for this really critical ecosystem, not for ourselves, but for the wildlife, for kids, for future generations. So what's the next step? Let's figure out a way. And I would just ask for you to put this on your agenda. It's been a long time. It's a very important project, and I think it would be well worth the effort to start talking through some of these issues. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mr. Lamb. Michelle, who is our next public commenter?
Our next public commenter is Jane Velez Mitchell. You may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Okay, how you doing? Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, it does take a second to get out of one mode and get into the others. Thank you. My name is Jane Velez Mitchell, and I am a journalist and author and documentary filmmaker who lives near LA's Biona Wetlands. And I see every day with my own eyes that this ecological reserve is thriving, not dead and dying as rapacious developers would claim and do claim. I see the pelicans, the egrets, the cormorants, the seals, and the many other animals who call this wetlands home, and they are thriving. And I know that the California Department of Fish and Wildlife has been completely co-opted by the fossil fuel industry that has concocted an Orwellian plan to fix the crumbling pipes deep under the wetlands through a phony, quote, restoration, end quote, that is, in fact, a wholesale destruction of the wetlands, the last coastal wetlands in the whole LA area, using bulldozers for a decade at a cost of over $200 million public dollars. Now, you control 60 acres of this land, so I am just begging you to be vigilant about these morally bankrupt efforts and do whatever you can to stop it. And now the courts have agreed with what we bulldozing opponents have been saying for years. This seriously flawed Biona bulldozing plan is so broken that a judge has now thrown out the environmental impact report. In the words of the LA Times, quote, a CDFW plan to introduce tidal flows into the Biona Creek wetlands has come to a screeching halt after a judge ruled recently that the agency's environmental impact report on the project failed to adequately account for flood risks, end quote. Flood risks that could affect me and so many other people who live around here. The judge invalidated the impact report, the environmental impact report, and halted all state work at the reserve, which they're trying to get around any way they can. He also said the plan did not have specific enough performance criteria for preserving wildlife. In people terms, he said the plan does not account for the 1 million wild animals who would be wiped out by a decade of bulldozing. Animals with nowhere else to go at a time when we're begging other nations to stop bulldozing their wildlife habitats because we globally are in the midst of the sixth mass extinction and should be doing everything we can to preserve the homes of these wild animals, not destroy them for economic gain. Please, I am begging you to challenge and reject this deeply flawed and morally bankrupt plan. We can be on the right side of history. The judge's ruling is an opportunity for people who care about the environment, who care about wildlife, who care about conservation, and who understand what's so obvious, that this is a financially motivated phony restoration, to take action to stop it. The judge has opened the door for that. It's a 67-page ruling, and it confirms what we've been saying all along. Please, we are really, really begging you to stop this. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Velez Mitchell. Michelle, the next speaker?
Yes, our next speaker is calling in with a phone number ending in 421. You may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Are you there? Michelle, maybe we can come back to that person if the person responds. Do we have someone else in the queue?
At this point in time, there are no other hands raised for comment.
Okay, great. Well, we do have a second public comment period at the end of today's program, if that individual can call in at that point. All right. So that concludes our public comment period. The next item of business will be the adoption of the minutes from the commission's meeting of August 17th, 2023. May I have a motion to approve the minutes and a second?
Move approval.
Second.
All right. So we have a motion from Commissioner Miller, seconded by Commissioner Kunkel. And we'll do a roll call vote.
That's correct. So just for transparency purposes, when both constitutional officers on the commission are represented by their commission pursuant to the government code, only one alternate can vote. Commissioner Kunkel.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Dumla.
Abstain.
Okay. The motion passes 2-0 with one abstention.
Great. The next order of business will be the adoption of the consent calendar. Are there any items you'd like removed from the calendar? Great. Next, I call on Ms. Lucchesi to indicate which items, if any, have been removed from the consent calendar.
Certainly. Consent items 19, 37, 43, and regular item 62 are removed from the agenda and will be considered at a later time. Consent items 42 and 50 are moved from the consent agenda to the regular agenda due to we have members of the public who would like to speak on both those items.
Great, thank you. Is there anyone joining us who wishes to speak on any item remaining on the consent calendar? If so, please come up to the podium or raise your Zoom hand or dial *9 if joining by phone now. And Michelle, do we have anyone wishing to speak on any item remaining on the consent calendar?
At this point in time, there are no hands raised for comment.
All right. Hearing none, we will now proceed with the vote.
I'll move approval of the consent calendar.
And I'll second.
All right, so we have a motion by Commissioner Miller, seconded by Commissioner Kunkel. And let's have a roll call vote, please.
Aye.
Aye. Abstain. All right, the next order of business will be the regular calendar. We will start with item 61. Which is to discuss legislation relevant to the California State Lands Commission. May we have the presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioners. This item is to provide a brief synopsis about this past year in the legislature and legislation relevant to the commission. We're a relatively small commission and we don't typically have a huge legislative portfolio, but there are normally a handful of bills that we sponsor, if not more, usually 1 to 3 each year. We also support legislation that benefits the lands and resources we manage or policy areas that align with the commission's mission and vision. And we work with offices to negotiate amendments on bills that impact the commission as well as the administration. On bills of importance. So we also track dozens of bills in areas such as climate change, sea level rise, renewable energy, plastic pollution, ocean health, and many others. Bills change all the time, and we always want to stay on top of what's happening, protect the commission's interests, and look for opportunities to advocate for the commission as the state embarks on addressing its many natural resources and environmental challenges. Broadly speaking, 1,046 bills reached the governor's desk this year. The governor signed 890 of those, which is about a 15% veto rate and consistent with the previous year. When the legislature reconvenes on January 3rd, it will have until January 31st to pass bills introduced this past year and still in the House of Origin. That includes SB 559 by Senator Min, a 2-year bill that would require the commission to terminate its remaining offshore oil and gas leases. That bill, which the commission doesn't have a position on, is likely to be heard in January and sent to the Appropriations Committee. One complication with this bill is that the commission is in the midst of developing a cost study that evaluates the fiscal impact of a voluntary relinquishment of our offshore oil and gas leases, as required by legislation passed in 2022. That report is due in December 2024 and will be preceded by a progress report due at the end of this year. Staff will continue to monitor SB 559 and work with the author's office and keep the author's office apprised as we progress with the study. Other 2-year bills staff will be monitoring include legislation to create a multi-billion dollar natural resource bond for the November 2024 ballot to fund climate change and sea level rise, among other things. At the same time, the governor is focused on a mental health bond for the March ballot, which could result in the climate bond shrinking so that the overall bond totals don't exceed a certain threshold. The legislature has until May to pass a climate bond if it is to go on the November 2024 ballot, and we expect discussions about the bond to restart in January and continue until around May. There'll also, as you know, be a leadership change when Senator McGuire becomes the pro tem and leads the Senate through the second, more compressed second half of the 2-year session. Other two-year bills, staff will be following our AB 80 by Assemblymember Addis, which the Commission adopted a support position on to create a wind science entity, and AB 1407, also by Assemblymember Addis, that requires the Ocean Protection Council to establish a kelp forest and estuary restoration and recovery framework and sets restoration goals for future years. That's a bill that will affect the lands and resources under the Commission's jurisdiction and which we are closely following. And then, as you know, there'll also be lots of other major amendments to two-year bills pending. Switching gears from two-year bills, I just wanted to touch on the outcome of this year's legislation and how that will affect the commission. And as previously reported, our two sponsored bills were signed into law to modernize our mineral extraction laws and facilitate a waterfront redevelopment project in Alameda. The governor signed three bills on offshore wind energy. One will facilitate procurement. Another will require the Energy Commission in collaboration with the State Lands Commission and other agencies to do a more granular assessment of seaport readiness to support offshore wind energy. And we expect to be heavily involved in that as we have been in the seaport planning component of the AB 525 strategic plan. And then the last bill the governor signed is SB 286 by Senator McGuire, which does a number of things, but most important to us, it designates the State Lands Commission as the CEQA lead for offshore wind energy projects. So that's really exciting, and we're really pleased and looking forward to implementing that bill in the years to come. The governor also signed SB 605 by Senator Padilla to require the State Energy Commission in collaboration with the State Lands Commission and others to study the viability of wave and tidal energy in offshore waters. The last bill to highlight is SB 273 by Senator Wiener that the governor signed that authorizes the commission to approve a mixed-use project at the long derelict Pier 3032 area in San Francisco. And we anticipate working closely with the port to implement that bill. Beyond that, and in terms of where we are now, we're taking a look at big picture policy areas and our various statutes, because there's always improvements and things that we can do to position us better. So we'll be looking at that over these next few months and report back in February of next year. And that concludes my report.
Thank you, Ms. Pemberton. Commissioner Kunkel, do you have any comments? Commissioner Miller?
Nope. Thank you.
Michelle, do we have any public comments?
Yes, our first speaker is Penny Lea. You may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Ms. Lea, are you there?
Hello?
Yes,
this is Penny. There are several of us speaking on item 42, and a couple of us raised our hands thinking that you were going to the consent before you went to regular calendar. So forgive me. And Scott Thomas also raised his hand. So we're just waiting to speak on 42.
Okay, great. So this is just on item
61. My mistake.
Thank you. Michelle, do we have anyone here speaking on item 61, the ledge report?
At this point in time, we have no other hands raised for comment.
All right. So this was an informational item, so no vote is required. All right. So moving on to item 63, it's to consider an authorization to execute the proposed Phase 2 agreement by and between the California State Lands Commission and ExxonMobil Corporation in settlement of the responsibilities to undertake work on Platform Holly offshore Goleta in Santa Barbara County. May we have the presentation, please?
Excellent. Good afternoon, Chair, Commissioners. My name is Joe Fable. I'm a senior attorney here at the State Lands Commission. We do have a presentation, and there it is. It is my extreme honor to be able to present item 63 today here at the State Lands Commission, which, of course, is the Phase 2 agreement at the South Elwood Project. This agreement is the culmination of 6 years of negotiation and cooperation, not just with Exxon, but also it's a continuation of the extensive collaboration we've had with agency groups, community groups, and tribal nations. This agreement is a huge milestone because, for one, it assures that Platform Holly will be decommissioned to the satisfaction of the commission. And secondly, it gives fidelity to the promises this commission made to the community back in 2017 when it directed staff to take all reasonable and necessary actions to make the community environment safe from the harms from Platform Holly. Next slide, please. But to really appreciate phase two and where we are, we really do have to look at the South Elwood project in its full. So what is the South Elwood project? Broadly speaking, it's the active decommissioning of all of the infrastructure offshore deserted by Venico when it declared bankruptcy in 2017. But to really focus on is what we have accomplished in phase one. Phase one is mitigating the hydrogen sulfide risk from gas emanating from Platform Holly, and then also plugging 32 wells that exist in an offshore environment. But to date, this commission has abated and eliminated that H2S risk, safely managed the EOF for a period of 5 years. It has fully plugged two wells off on the 421 piers. It commissioned the EIR to do that work in under a year, I must add, which is pretty amazing. This commission completed the decommissioning of those two piers safely. It's conducted 24/7 operation maintenance Platform Holly. It's plugged to the 30 production zones off on Platform Holly, so ending that H2S risk, although there's still some remediation. And also, in a commitment to communication and transparency, we've held 9 town halls, other community and tribal outreach. We've also hosted for a very long time now, monthly and more numerous interagency meetings to keep our agency partners apprised. Next slide, please. So phase two, what are we looking at here? Consists of really three components, which we're currently in right now. That's platform hardening. And this is inerting the facility, transferring it from an oil and gas production facility by removing the equipment, plugging those wells, and turning it into, again, a safe facility powered mostly by a solar panel. We'll have security platforms, cameras out there just to make sure that we're limiting trespass. So that's currently in operation. The next step is caretaking. That is a process where over about a year or two, there'll be routine inspections to go out there and, again, just make sure that the facility is safe, navigation lights are on, it's not a navigational hazard, and again, there's no occupation. And the third step, which is going to take a little while, and that's currently what we're planning for, is platform decommissioning, and that's what we're here for. That is the planning, analyzing, subject to an EIR, and undertaking the platform decommissioning. And generally, right now, both the planning and undertaking, that's a obligation that Exxon will be taking, and mostly at its expense, and that's the key element of the phase two agreement. Next slide, please. So the phase two agreement, it is a legal framework. It is based off of what we've been operating for the last 5 years, which is the phase one agreement. Again, it's a contractual document that identifies liabilities and overall obligations. What the phase one agreement, though, did in large part is it provided incredible amounts of flexibility, placing with a technical committee of technical staff from both the Exxon and the commission, engineers, budgetary staff, policy side staff, on reaching decisions on actions that need to be taken to move us towards P&A, also to make the facility safe. And that's most exemplified through the COVID-19 process. Where again, without litigation, without compromise, we were able to change our operations out there and institute a delay and keep the platform safe until we could restart P&A a few years later. Now, the phase two agreement's built on really the same general framework, the one that's worked. Again, it lays out the general responsibilities for hardening and caretaker, and that's identifying Exhibit A to the phase two agreement. So again, we're laying it out there, whose responsibility each party bears and the costs associated with that. Key thing, again, Exxon currently is undertaking the planning will be undertaking the execution of platform decommissioning. State Lands Commission will be undertaking the environmental analysis under the California Environmental Quality Act. Next slide, please. So again, sort of to restate here, the three major elements, I mean, primarily to focus on legal settlement. This is a compromise of claims. This is a negotiation we've reached with Exxon, similar to the phase one agreement. Key aspect of that it does reserve the commission's right to determine the state of platform decommissioning, what that final disposition takes. Key to that is the development environmental impact report, which again, a notice of preparation should come out next year. The commission will likely be deciding and considering whether to certify the EIR in 2025. And then from that point, within a certain period, depending on mobilization, decommissioning will occur. And then finally, only when decommissioning is completed to the commission's satisfaction, and this is in the agreement, will Exxon be released from any further liability. Next slide. And finally, the goal, and this is what our focus on really has been in developing and negotiating a phase two agreement, it's really to the best we can resolve any remaining disputes with ExxonMobil related to the final obligations under 421, 3120, and 3242, the leases out there. Again, ideally, this will be the last major agreement that we do need to enter into, and then everything from there is just getting the job done. Final slide. And with that, thank you very much. If you have any questions, happy to answer.
Thank you, Mr. Fable. Commissioner Kunkel, do you have any comments or questions?
Thank you, Chair. I'll be abstaining from this item.
Okay. Commissioner Miller, any comments or questions?
No, I just think it's another example of the commission's great work to... It's on. Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.
But no, seriously, you have to stay and get accolades. I just think it's another really, it's just a great example of how rigorous the work is, how much you do to ensure that when we decommission these long-standing platforms, that you do it really well. And I think there's a lot to celebrate in this case and just really grateful for the work. So thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you. And do we have any comments from the public, Michelle?
At this time, we have no hands raised for public comment.
I'll move approval, Mr. Chair.
Great, thank you. And I'll just echo what Commissioner Miller said. You know, I think we're also entering phase two on the very strong foundation with phase one. And, you know, I think, you know, the commission deserves a lot of credit for ensuring that, you know, the oil operator is held financially and operationally responsible for all these different steps along the way. All right, so we have a motion from Commissioner Miller. I will second that motion, and may we have a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunkel.
Abstain.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Dumla.
Aye.
The motion passes 2-0 with one abstention.
Fantastic. All right, moving on to item 64, which is to acknowledge the submittal of a draft trust land use plan pursuant to Chapter 372, Statutes of 2019, by the San Diego Unified Port District. May we have the presentation, please?
Good afternoon, Chair and Commissioners. As you know, the San Diego Unified Port District is a trustee of sovereign tide and submerged lands within and around San Diego Bay that were granted by the legislature in 1962. Previously, the Inner Bay was ungranted lands, and it was managed by the State Lands Commission, but SB 507, enacted in 2020, granted the Inner Tidelands, which we affectionately call the Donut Hole, to the Port of San Diego to manage. The newly granted area is mostly open water. It includes approximately 8,000 acres of submerged lands and 5 acres of tidelands. SB 507 requires the port to submit a trust land use plan to the commission for the newly granted area by January 1st, 2024. And that trust land use plan should describe any proposed development, preservation, or other use of the granted lands. A trust land use plan is a standard requirement in new or expanded grants, and it's the document that guides how the trustee will manage the public trust lands. And it also provides accountability to the public and the legislature and assists the commission in our oversight role. Over the past several years, the port has been developing the trust land use plan, and they've been great about collaborating with commission staff along the way. The trust land use plan will memorialize the port's goals, policies, and allowable activities within the newly granted lands. And it will establish a comprehensive vision for how the port will manage the use, design, improvement, and preservation of the trust lands. The trust land use plan is considered a draft because port staff will be processing the trust land use plan as a port master plan amendment with the California Coastal Commission. Once the California Coastal Commission certifies the port master plan amendment, the port will submit the finalized trust land use plan to the State Lands Commission. The port anticipates final approval of the plan in 2025 and will continue coordinating with State Lands Commission as the trust land use plan progresses. Staff is recommending the commission acknowledge the submittal of the draft trust land use plan pursuant to SB 507. And with that, the port has graciously made its way downstairs again to deliver another presentation.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you, Reed. I believe we have a presentation slides, as they say. Okay, thank you. Thank you. Well, I'll just start. Okay, how's that? Awesome. Well, good afternoon, Chair, Commissioners, and Executive Officer Lucchese. My name is Elise Gayama, Senior Planner for the Port of San Diego. I'm joined today by a few members of our team, Jason Giffen, Vice President of Planning and Environment, Shiraz Tongri from our General Counsel's Office, and Dennis Larson, Principal at Nexus Planning and Research. Thank you for including our presentation on today's agenda about the development of a trust lands use plan, which we like to refer to as the TULIP. Next slide, please. So Reed spoke about this already, but I'll just, you know, before I dive into this presentation, I wanted to give a quick introduction to the Port of San Diego. So we are a trustee of state lands managing submerged lands and tidelands in and around San Diego Bay for the people of the state of California. This slide represents our overall jurisdiction. Prior to 2020, we managed about 2,400 acres of port tidelands or land acres, which are shown in the orange, as well as about 3,600 acres of submerged lands, which are shown in the lighter blue color on the map. Through SB 507, approximately 5 acres of additional land area and 8,000 additional acres of submerged lands were granted to us from the State Lands Commission, and those are shown in the darkest blue on the slide. The port is really grateful for this opportunity to manage larger portions of San Diego Bay on behalf of the state of California in a holistic and integrated way. Related to our uses here in San Diego Bay, we manage 2 maritime cargo terminals, 1 cruise ship terminal, and along with a wide variety of other uses, including restaurants, hotels, retail, parks, and open space, commercial and sports fishing harbors, and habitat areas. And as a regional agency, we also regularly collaborate on management of San Diego Bay with our member jurisdictions and other agency neighbors, such as the U.S. Navy, as well as transportation agencies, resource agencies, nonprofits, academia, and community members, just to name a few. Next slide, please. So as Reed mentioned in his intro, the submerged lands and tidelands granted to the district through SB 507 are shown in this blue hatched area on the map. SB 507 requires the district to prepare a TULIP to be submitted to the state lands by January 1, 2024. Since the legislation passed, we have been in continuous communication with state lands staff on the process. The trust lands use plan only applies to what was transferred through the legislation. Based on the legislation, the TULIP can be prepared as an amendment to the port's certified port master plan. And preparing it in this way provides a number of benefits, including 1, the required contents of a port master plan or PMPA, as stated in the California Coastal Act, would also meet the requirements of a trust lands use plan, including describing proposed development, preservation, or other uses for the granted area. And 2, preparing the TULIP as a PMPA would eventually provide the district with coastal development permitting authority over the area. Next slide, please. So here's a deeper look at the area covered by the TULIP. The majority of the area transferred through SB 507 is submerged. And through the TULIP, the water use designations we are proposing include conservation intertidal, which is a designation primarily reserved for management of habitat, wildlife conservation, and environmental protection, industrial and deep water berthing, which is for water areas primarily dedicated to ship berthing, particularly larger vessels, federal navigation channel, which is dedicated to the deep water channel constructed and maintained by the Army Corps of Engineers, navigation corridor, which is another designation dedicated to water navigation, and open bay slash water, which is a much broader designation and allows for multiple types of recreation. We also want to point out that approximately 5 acres of land area were also a part of the transfer. These are all in the southern portion of the bay, and we propose designating them as recreation open space as they primarily comprise areas of the existing Bayshore Bikeway. Generally, the recreation open space designation is for visitors serving public open spaces that provide public access. Next slide, please. This slide shows the overall process for preparing the tulip and specifically the draft tulip that we are presenting today. As you may be aware, the port has been engaged in a process called integrated planning, which includes a comprehensive update to our port master plan, which we refer to as the PMPU. Through the PMPU process, we have been engaged with various agencies, member cities, stakeholders, and communities to prepare a long-range plan with policies that are flexible yet specific for future development on tidelands and are consistent with the PMPU's vision of one bay rich diversity. Since the PMPU process has taken a comprehensive bay-wide approach to plan for development in and around San Diego Bay, preparing the draft tulip included mirroring any applicable policies from the PMPU, adding new policies and planning districts that are specific to the newly granted area, preparing a discussion draft for public review, and then making revisions based on the comments and feedback received. Next slide, please. In addition to the comments we received on the discussion draft, once SB 507 was passed and we began preparing the Trust Lands Use Plan, we started public outreach and stakeholder engagement to receive additional input. For example, we met with agency stakeholders such as the U.S. Navy, U.S. Coast Guard, and the Army Corps of Engineers. And we also met with local and regional environmental and recreational organizations such as the Southwest Wetlands Interpretive Association, Outdoor Outreach, and Native Like Water. So far, we have held 22 focus meetings with stakeholders to identify and discuss current uses and operations in the bay and how this plan can protect and maintain those existing uses, proactively address any potentially competing uses, and see where there may be opportunities to add, enhance, or expand some uses. As you can see on the slide, there are many steps ahead in this process, and we will continue public outreach and stakeholder engagement throughout. Next slide, please. So to walk you through the basic outline of the draft tulip, this slide shows the table of contents of the document. It includes a background user guide, elements, development standards, and planning districts. The elements in the draft tulip include water and land use, mobility, ecology, safety and resiliency, environmental justice, and economics. While these element topics mirror those of the PMPU, in the draft tulip, the policies in each element only apply to the newly granted area and include new bay-wide policies. Next slide, please. The planning districts chapter includes planned improvements and planning district-specific development standards. In the draft tulip, we've identified 4 new planning districts: North Bay, North Central Bay, South Central Bay, and South Bay. Since SB 507 granted new lands to the district's management, these planning districts have not yet been a part of our certified port master plan. And as a part of a future PMPA, the Trust Lands Use Plan would add these new planning districts to our coastal permitting jurisdiction. And the boundaries of these new planning districts follow the ecoregion boundaries identified in the Integrated Natural Resources Management Plan, which is a joint natural resources document between the Navy and the Port of San Diego. Next slide, please. Here you can see the acreage breakdown for each of the 4 new planning districts. The total acreage of granted lands covered under the tulip is approximately 8,002 acres. Next slide, please. On July 20 of this year, we released a discussion draft of the tulip for a 30-day public review period. We received 22 comment letters on the discussion draft, 2 from agencies, 3 from organizations, 1 from a tenant, and 16 from individuals. Next slide, please. This slide shows the primary themes of the comments submitted. As you can see, many are related to providing clarification on SB 507 and the areas covered under the tulip, existing management responsibilities within the transferred area, and if SB 507 affects any of those responsibilities, and the relationship between the tulip and other port documents. In addition, we received comments specific to adding or enhancing environmental stewardship language throughout the TULIP and encouraging more nature-based shoreline solutions. We also received some comments that are outside of the scope or boundaries of the TULIP or SB 507. Next slide, please. This list shows an example of revisions that we made in the draft TULIP based on the comments received. For example, we've added clarifications that previously established responsibilities in San Diego Bay remain unchanged, such as navigation maintenance with the U.S. Coast Guard or dredging requirements with the Army Corps. We've also added clarification that the TULIP only covers the lands transferred to the district per SB 507. We've also added new language in a few of the elements to enhance policy commitments to environmental stewardship as a public trust use, and added new language to support more nature-based shoreline solutions and coastal resiliency in the safety and resiliency element, as well as the four planning districts. Next slide, please. This slide represents the overall timeline for development of the TULIP. This year, we have presented to our Board of Port Commissioners twice, once in April regarding the framework for preparing the TULIP, and then after we received feedback on the discussion draft, we prepared and presented the draft TULIP to our board last month in September, which is when we received direction to submit the document to you, the State Lands Commission. Throughout the development of this plan, we have been in close coordination with state land staff and appreciate their time and effort to discuss this process with us. In September, we also received direction to use the draft TULIP as the basis for starting the CEQA process. After CEQA, we would then process the PMPA for certification with the Coastal Commission and then submit the final TULIP to the State Lands Commission. As you can see on this slide, stakeholder engagement is a key component to this process and will continue throughout the next stages of this process. Next slide, please. And that concludes our presentation. We are available for questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that wonderful presentation. Let's see. So I will be abstaining from this item just to let everyone know. So Commissioner Kunkel, do you have any comments or questions?
Briefly, I just wanted to thank the port. I should have done this earlier for hosting Controller Cohen just a couple months ago. And I'm looking at you, Jason, especially, but all of port staff. She really enjoyed viewing the diverse uses of the bay and the innovation happening here. For the TULIP, I understand we are just acknowledging today. I just want to clarify, not approving.
That's right. Okay. We're acknowledging.
Great. So the controller appreciates the commitment to environmental stewardship and nature-based solutions and environmental justice. And we're seeing some really good things in there and looking forward to the final report. So I'm ready to move whenever the others are ready.
I'll second.
And Commissioner Miller, any comments or questions?
No.
Okay. So we have a motion from Commissioner Kunkel, followed by a second from Commissioner Miller. Actually, do we have any public comments first? Sorry.
At this point in time, we have no hands raised for comment.
Great. All right. So may we have a roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunkel.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller?
Aye.
Chair Dumlau?
Abstain.
The motion passes 2-0 with one abstention.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. All right, so moving on to items now that were pulled from our consent agenda. So we will begin with item 42, which is to consider an application from the Orange County Flood Control District. May we have that presentation?
Good afternoon, commissioners. My name is Drew Simpkin, and I will be presenting on agenda item 42. This item is for the consideration of a public agency use, general lease public agency use, and dredging to the Orange County Flood Control District. Next slide. The mouth of the Lower Santa Ana River is located between Huntington Beach State Park in the city of Huntington Beach and the city of Newport Beach. Next slide. The commission's jurisdiction, shown here as the hatch lines, the adjacent upland, the area above the magenta line, is unincorporated land within Orange County. On October 21st, 2021, the commission authorized a 2-year general lease, public agency use, and dredging for the continued use and maintenance of 2 riprap flood control jetties, a riprap dike, and dredging in the lower Santa Ana River to the Orange County Flood Control District, or county. That lease expires October 20th, 2023. Maintenance dredging at this location is necessary to remove built-up sand and encourage positive flow from the flood control channel to the ocean. Periodic dredging reduces flood risks, limits property damage, and improves public safety. Keeping the river mouth open and providing tidal flows also benefits fish, plants, and habitat in the Santa Ana River salt marsh. A relatively small portion of dredged material is removed from sovereign land at the river mouth, with the majority of the material removed from the river channel inland and outside the commission's jurisdiction. The county has applied for a new lease. In addition to the previously authorized improvements, the county has also requested to place dredge sand along the beach from the mouth of the Santa Ana River down coast to the Newport Bay Harbor entrance as needed. Next slide. During periods of non-dredging, the accumulation of sand shown as in the red circles within the flood control channel creates areas that have become popular with dog owners and is used as an informal off-leash dog park. These built-up accumulated sand areas exist for approximately 250 days per year. The size of the buildups depends on the frequency and intensity of winter storms and the effects of tides and predominant ocean currents. Next slide, please. The Huntington State Beach Lease Turn Natural Preserve, managed by California State Parks, is located adjacent and up coast of the river, shown in the blue circle. Dogs are not permitted on the state beach except for service dogs. All dogs must be leashed within parking lots and multi-use trails. In the city of Newport Beach, which is to the right of the flood control channel or down coast, dogs are not allowed on any oceanfront beach or any oceanfront sidewalk between 10 a.m. and 4:30 p.m., except for service dogs. Off-leash dogs are never allowed in any public spaces, including parks and beaches. Orange County ordinances also prohibit dogs within public beaches, except for service dogs. The county maintains that its dog ordinances do not apply to the state-owned lands. Specifically, the county asserts that the dog leash requirements do not apply because the county does not consider the state-owned property to be public property. However, the same ordinances also forbids unrestrained dogs on private property. The county also asserts dogs are not prohibited because the county does not consider the state-owned property to be a public beach. Commission staff disagree with the county's ordinance interpretations and has informed the county that it may enforce reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on public use of the lease premises to protect public health, safety, and the environment. Next slide, please. Local environmental groups contacted commission staff starting in around 2020 with concerns that the presence of off-leash dogs threatens endangered and threatened bird species within the lease premises, including the western snowy plover and the California lease tern. The California coast is a critical habitat for the western snowy plover and lease tern. Plovers are listed as threatened under the federal U.S. Endangered Species Act and are listed as a species of special concern under the California Endangered Species Act. California lease tern is listed as endangered under both federal and state laws. Next slide. In 2021, staff contacted California State Parks, the Department of Fish and Wildlife, and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, as well as local nonprofits, including the Sea and Sage Audubon Society, Orange County Habitats, and Orange County Coast Keeper. State, federal, and local entities all indicated that the presence of dogs disturbs the foraging grounds of birds and severely degrades habitat area. Since the issuance of the short 2-year lease, local environmental groups have continued to provide staff photos and video showing the public and off-leash dogs within the lease premises. Next slide. Thank you. As required under the terms of the lease, the county provided two annual reports detailing county law enforcement efforts in the Santa Ana River mouth, covering the periods of July 2021 through June 2022 and July 2022 through June 2023. Next slide, please. The reports indicate that Orange County Sheriff's Department issues warnings from their vehicles, notifying the public that they are trespassing and need to leave the flood control channel. The report also notes that deputy visits are not linked to peak public usage, but rather when deputies are available. Staff is not aware of any citations being issued by local law enforcement for trespass in the lease area. Next slide, please. In addition, staff reviewed the 2022 and 2023 Orange County Coast Keeper Santa Ana River Mouth Monitoring Project reports for additional data regarding the use at the lower Santa Ana River mouth. The goal of the project is to monitor human, dog, and bird use of the area and to provide education and outreach to residents and visitors about the wildlife management area at the river mouth and the endangered species that reside within it. According to the 2023 report, between January and June 2023, approximately 1,100 visitors visited the Santa Ana River mouth. Approximately 1,100 surveys at the river mouth were conducted by 18 trained volunteers. During the surveys, approximately 9,300 people and 800 dogs were observed. Next slide. According to the surveys, 132 dogs were observed off-leash and 13 on-leash within lands under the commission's jurisdiction. Next slide. In comparison, the previous year's survey indicated an observed 991 off-leash dogs. This year saw a significant decline in the number of off-leash dogs within the commission's jurisdiction. However, it's unclear whether the decrease is due to law enforcement presence, inclement winter weather, or the location and formation of natural sand deposits, which can encourage or discourage use within the flood control channel. Next slide. Since the issuance of the lease in 2021, Commission and California Coastal Commission staff have explored opportunities to fund additional fish and wildlife or state parks law enforcement positions that would allow for more targeted and frequent enforcement within the lease premises. However, discussions with other sister agencies have not resulted in additional agreements or funded law enforcement positions. Next slide. The proposed lease would include previous lease provisions, which staff believe provide the county the ability to fully enforce existing county ordinances, not interfere with any future enforcement efforts by other state agencies, and require the county collaborate and coordinate in good faith with any future applications and agreements for enforcement with other state and federal agencies. The lease also requires the county to continue to provide annual reports detailing county law enforcement efforts within the river mouth. Next slide. In conclusion, staff requests that the commission adopt staff's recommendation to authorize a general lease, public agency use, and dredging to the county beginning October 21st, 2023, for a term of 5 years, for the use and maintenance of two riprap flood control jetties, a riprap dike, maintenance dredging, and the deposition of sand in the lower Santa Ana River. Next slide, please. And that concludes staff's presentation. We're available for any questions, and the county also has representatives.
Great, thank you. Commissioner Kunkel, do you have any comments or questions?
No, I'll be abstaining from this item. Thank you, Chair.
Commissioner Miller, do you have any comments or questions?
No, I'm ready to move approval after public comment.
All right. Michelle, do we have any public commenters?
Yes, our first speaker is Giles Matthews. Please make your way to the podium to begin your comment.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Giles Matthews. I'm the Regulatory Permitting Manager at Orange County Public Works, representing Orange County Flood Control District. And I have a presentation, I believe. And I'd just like to say first that we support all the lease provisions We've been working with Drew through this process. So we agree with everything that has been proposed in the provisions. The one thing we would like to request, which was on the original draft lease, was for the lease to be a 10-year lease. And I will talk about that through in my presentation. So, and I'll skip through some of the slides because Drew's already talked about them. So you could move on to the next slide. And then this is just the location of where the flood control channel is relative to the ocean, and obviously the star shows where our lease is. You can move on to the next one, please. So the primary function of the channel, as Drew said, is for flooding, but we have a secondary function, which is to maintain the tidelands behind. We have very real examples of that channel becoming blocked and mass fish dying in the marsh and the eelgrass behind in there dying as well, which the coastal fisheries rely on. So the maintaining that open channel is very important, both for wildlife and for the flood function. Next slide, please. So there are numerous sensitive resources on the area. We have California lease tern, snowy plover, grunion, Ridgeway's rail in the marsh, as I said, the eelgrass that support the coastal fisheries. And we've got marshes in the Santa Ana River, which are upstream of the channel, which need to be maintained with intertidal flows. And the county is attempting to address these needs of all these species. Some of these management needs aren't the same. So we recognize that the needs of lease tern and snowy plover, which live in the river mouth, aren't necessarily the same as the needs for the eelgrass and the ridgeway's rail, so we have to strike a very delicate balance on that. Next slide, please. So I'll just quickly run through this is just some of the things that Drew's already talked about, our ability to enforce within the channel. As I said, we agree with all the provisions. There are several county codes that we agree that we will maintain, as with all of our flood channels, which are implementing non-trespass rules within our flood channels. And we have had the OC Sheriff Department has been supporting us in this regard. And I'll move on to the next one, please. And so one of the things that we as Drew said, because it is a flood control channel and not a beach, different ordinances apply. If we termed it a beach, then the public would be able to be in there as well. As it is, it's a flood control channel where no public access is allowed. Now, the difficulty with that is having someone who can be there and police it at all times. Next slide, please. So we'd like a 10-year lease for a number of reasons, but the lease renewal process is quite burdensome, both for the flood control district and state lands. It requires the application process to begin a year in advance. We're currently working through formal consultation with the US Fish and Wildlife Service and others, including the Coastal Commission. So a lot of the concerns that State Lands Commission have are already addressed by other agencies. And we would ultimately wish to be able to, and we're working with them, and we fully recognize that there are many sensitive species in the area that need to be addressed. Thank you. And I'm available for questions if you have any.
Thank you, Mr. Matthews. Michelle, do we have anyone else from the public?
Yes, our next speaker will be Michael J. Sinicori. You may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Good afternoon, Commission. Do you guys see me? Hear me okay?
Yes, we can.
So I'm the assistant city engineer in Newport Beach, excuse me, and I've been here about 30 years and worked with the county and obviously our own city beaches for that period of time. We're very supportive of this request for a 10-year lease, mainly because we have so many other agencies to coordinate with. Doing a release look every 2 years. This is just 2 years ago. We went through all this before. 5 years will be here before you know it. And we need to maintain this engineered flood control channel for not only the benefit of flood protection and the pressure we get here at the city, is there's a marsh behind this that when it gets clogged up, we end up with dead habitat in the back, meaning the sharks, the stingrays, the octopus. Believe it or not, we have octopus back in the marsh, beautiful octopus that are there, and they end up floating in the water because we've clogged off the river, and it happens very quickly if the sand's not moved out of there. And we fully applaud the county for keeping on this. And Giles mentioned the problems with some of the other agencies that he's got to coordinate with. We have a nesting season that I want to tackle, moving forward here. The time to clear out this sand is really probably in April, May, right before the summer season, so we can get the sand out of the channel, give it clear, keep it clear through the summer, so the marsh is active and vibrant, and also so the dogs aren't anywhere near the birds that are nesting across the channel. The less sand in the channel, the less dogs will be there in the county area. And we supervise our beaches. We do enforcement. We issue warnings. We log those warnings. If somebody's a repeat offender, they're going to get a $200 ticket, I believe is the number. And we do this all across our 7 miles of beaches. So we're very supportive of the 10-year lease. And let's focus on other ways to keep this engineered flood control channel open and the marsh behind it from getting clogged up and causing an environmental problem. We've been requested also to better coordinate with the county sheriff. I've had a long conversation with the supervisor in animal control today. Yesterday. He's off today. And we're 100%, 200% on board with a coordinated enforcement effort out there. If we want to do that, we're here to support the county. So with that said, I'm also available for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Sinagori. Michelle, who is our next speaker?
Yes, our next speaker is Jack Eat. You may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Good afternoon, State Lands Commissioners. My name is Jack Eat. Here, let me... Okay, my video is not working, but that's fine. I am a board member with Friends of Harbors, Beaches, and Parks. I'm also an urban planner, and I've spent a long time on the health of the Santa Ana River. FHBP, Friends of Harbors, Beaches, and Parks, is a historical watchdog for the County of Orange regarding management of harbors, beaches, trails, parks. We've been doing that since the 90s, and we work very closely with the county to make sure that things are happening the way they should. We're interested in public access. We believe that it's really important, obviously, but and recreation in all of its forms is extremely important as well, but there's necessary to balance the needs for ecosystems, which has been noted here. The interest is to pay attention to the needs of this ecosystem. The problem is enforcement, as there's been a lot of talk about, okay, we're down for enforcement, we're going to do this, but there has not been, a real movement here to actually take care of this enforcement. The Santa Ana River mouth historically would have been the most biologically productive ecosystem basically along that coast, and we're trying to limp our way toward bringing that into a reality. And the dog, the people, and the interruptions are really not helping that. So the ordinances are there, and basically there's also conditions that are important. Enforcement is the problem. I think we need to see third-party enforcement. We have not seen success. There's a lot of talk, oh, we're going to work together, we're going to go hand-in-hand 200%. Well, that's really great, but we also need some more dedicated focus here. And that needs to be funded, and that needs to be institutionally supported from the beginning here. We support the letter written by Chatton Brown, which outlines the problem as well as a solution to that. And we'd like to see, you know, failure to provide this third party enforcement, frankly, would result in violations of the public trust, California Environmental Quality Act, the Coastal Act, and the Endangered Species Act. We request that there be part of this lease to be a third party enforcement. Thank you very much for hearing my comment. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you, Mr. Eat. Michelle, do we have any other speakers?
Yes, our next speaker is Penny Elia. Please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Hello?
We can hear you.
Oh.
Please proceed when you're ready.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have a PowerPoint. Would you please start that before you start my time? I'd very much appreciate it.
1 second. Do we have the PowerPoint presentation?
I sent it.
Okay.
To
it's
Kim
coming.
Lunetta?
It's coming.
Okay.
1 second.
Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you very much. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm Penny Elia with the Sierra Club. And before I address this item, I do wish to thank you for your strong work at the Tijuana River. I can't agree more that far too many issues go unresolved for far too long. Case in point is the issue that you're hearing right now. For the past 7 years, the environmental community has been pleading with multiple state and federal agencies to help us protect and preserve threatened, endangered, and highly impacted natural resources at the Santa Ana River. We have been unable to gain the support of any of our resource agencies, but are here again today to ask for your support. Let's look at some of the ongoing problems at the river mouth, keeping in mind that all of these problems could be easily resolved by this commission requiring the county to comply with the conditions of their lease. All of our efforts have failed, and this is why the county was given only a 2-year trial lease to see if they were able to comply. They have not been able to. It is up to the commission to not accept any more excuses. And a 10-year lease, I'm sorry, just doesn't make any sense at all. Next slide, please. Believe it or not, this is the area where Western Snowy Plover and Least Tern should be thriving. But on this typical day at the river mouth with no enforcement, this is the stark reality. Next slide, please. Dog owners bemoan the loss of their pets, but refuse to stay out of the river mouth. Note the huge list of ordinances and codes prohibiting public access. Again, no enforcement. Next slide, please. Stay out, stay alive. What does this mean to the county? This is their sign. Next slide, please. Paragliders land and take off on county property constantly. Again, no enforcement. And it doesn't matter how much sand is there or not there, they do this. Next slide, please. And finally, failed enforcement during the actual dredging project. Children climbing on sand piles and bulldozers, off-leash dogs walking right by the monitors on county property and adjacent protected areas. We ask you again today to take the action needed to resolve this ongoing situation at the Santa Ana River. One commissioner has already said she's ready to approve it. I don't understand. We need compliance from the terms of your lease. And before you just jump to approval, please require the county to secure external or internal enforcement staffing within the next 60 days. A renewed lease should not be the reward for non-compliance. We must have your help here, please. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Ms. Aaliyah. Michelle, next speaker.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Rob Hamilton. Rob, you may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Good afternoon, commissioners. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. Hi, I'm Rob Hamilton. I'm a wildlife biologist. I've been working in Orange County for the past 35 years. I have a quick PowerPoint presentation. Do you have that? No, thanks. So yeah, as I said, I'm Rob Hamilton from Hamilton Biological Incorporated. I'm speaking as just a private citizen. I've been involved with this issue with Santa Ana River Mouse for the past 8 years, but others have been involved much longer. Next slide, please. As people have mentioned already, the Santa Ana River occupies a very important place in the lower Santa Ana River ecosystem, which is 1,300 acres of very important marshes and adjacent uplands. Next slide, please. The river is adjacent to critical habitat for snowy plover and the least tern nesting area. Both the plover and the tern nest right adjacent to the river channel and Talbert Channel upstream, or up coast, I mean. These ought to be extremely important avian use areas for these listed species. Next slide, please. But what we see is constant use of these areas by people and their pets, and no amount of signage or warnings has any effect on this. As countless hours of volunteer observations have pointed out and documented. Next slide, please. So the county monitoring of the dredging, which they point to as showing that they've minimized impacts to wildlife and the environment while managing the delicate balance at this location, it just shows that there's no plovers using the river mouth. That's what we all said to begin with. We've been saying that for years. The plovers don't use it because there's always people there. I understand that opening the channel and removing the sand is, of course, important for flood control, but having people and dogs in there is not important. It's important that they be kept out. And we see the county and the city of Newport Beach trying to conflate these issues that, well, we have to keep the river clear for wildlife, but you don't have to have people and dogs playing around in the river. Next slide, please. So without effective enforcement, nothing's ever going to change. It hasn't changed for over, you know, for decades now. It's not going to change. There are alternative dog beach locations that we have identified in the city of Newport Beach, but they're never going to be pursued as long as they can just get away with letting people play around in the river mouth. Every time we talk to a governmental agency, whether it's the city or the state or the county, they all point to some other agency that should be taking jurisdiction. You're not working together and no one's solving the problem. In the end, it's the listed species that are paying the price. And, you know, a lot of resources are put into trying to recover these species. So it would be really nice if the state and the local governments could work together to achieve that goal that we all hold. And that's the end of my presentation. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Michelle, our next speaker.
Our next speaker is Dan Silver. Dan, you may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Good afternoon. I'm Dan Silver with Endangered Habitats League. Thank you very much for the opportunity to address your commission today. We oppose the lease renewal absent additional conditions to compel enforcement of trespass and leash laws. Renewal absent such conditions rewards the non-compliance that you've seen today, perpetuates an unacceptable status quo, and endangers the public and the bird species. While the current lease, quote, requires the county to enforce its regulations, it doesn't. It was interesting to hear from Newport Beach, which issues citations and fines. There have been no citations or fines issued by the County of Orange at all. Enforce, if you look it up in the dictionary, means to compel obedience. Enforcement is an outcome. It's not a process, and it's certainly not a charade of having police car, sheriff's cars just drive by with a brief bullhorn warning and go away. This is a charade. And the facts show that the birds aren't there and the dogs and people are still there in the hundreds. The Orange County reports don't contradict this at all. They show widespread ongoing violations, ineffectual measures, no accountable methodology, and again, no citations issued. It's not working. Your lease is not being complied with. And if you simply renew it, the same exact conditions will continue. Of course, dredging should occur, but you need a new condition to fund enforcement by an appropriate agency other than the sheriff, which is not interested in doing this work. It could be Fish and Wildlife, Newport Beach Animal Control. We need a new condition that says within 60 days, the county will demonstrate to the State Lands Commission satisfaction that it has put in place new and adequate enforcement personnel with the authority to issue citations and warnings under the applicable ordinances, either internally from the county itself, like code enforcement or the County Animal Services Division, or externally from other agencies. There are solutions here, but unless you attach a new condition, we are going to get no progress and the same really unacceptable conditions for both people and wildlife. Please stop this charade and please institute accountability. That's the way our government should work. You can fix this. Please do so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Silver. Michelle, the next speaker.
Yes, our next speaker is Christine Kim. Christine, please unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Hello, can you hear me?
Sure can.
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thank you so much. My name is Christine Kim. I'm the Vice President of Sea and Sage Audubon Society. I'm here today to request your assistance as the responsible landowner in requiring that the County of Orange, as you've already heard, the lessee, or a third party do a better job of enforcing existing county laws on your property. In 1964, Sea and Sage requested California State Parks to set up a protected area for the last few remaining California leased tern nests on Huntington State Beach next to the Santa Ana River. This was initiated in part by the work of a young biologist, Wayne Woodruff, who identified that the trembling of the nests, which are built right on the sand, by people and dogs to be the major cause of a rapidly dwindling population of terns. A few years later, two-thirds of our annual budget went to help build a fence around a very small area near the Santa Ana River. That fenced area became the first recognized preserve under the 1970 Endangered Species Act. Since then, we've helped every year both financially and with volunteer efforts to expand and improve that fenced area, so that's now it's 13 acres. After spending the rest of the year over the ocean waters of Central America, several hundred federally endangered California leased terns return in spring to Huntington Beach to nest and to raise their young inside the preserve, as you've heard. This preserve is managed by California State Parks and relies on a large volunteer corps, which includes many of our Sea and Sage members. These volunteers dedicate hundreds of hours each year monitoring the breeding colony, working with the public, and watching out for predators. This fenced area provides very good protection for the tern nests from disturbance, but the terns also need to do things outside the preserve to survive and nest successfully, including foraging in the mouth of the Santa Ana River. Access to this close by food is critical for their success. But this is where they're constantly disturbed and chased off by dogs, as you've seen in the photos. This river is a critical habitat for both sensitive and common shorebirds and seabirds, including the least terns and also the threatened snowy plovers. We're doing our best to protect these birds and hope someday to get them off the endangered species list. But we desperately need your help for actual enforcement and mitigation efforts to keep the dogs completely out of the Santa Ana River. So thank you so much for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Kim. And Michelle, anyone else?
Yes, our next speaker is Scott Thomas. Scott, you may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
Scott, are you there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay, good.
Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, commissioners. I'm going to keep this brief because a lot of it, what we need to say has been said, that the river mouth is very important to these birds. But I do want to focus in there just a little bit and make sure that that's well understood. During the breeding season, when these birds are there, they have to be close to a alternative food source other than the ocean where they get most of their food. That's why every least tern colony, breeding colony up and down the coast is directly associated with a river, bay, some type of estuary, so that they can get to the food source quickly and efficiently and reduce the energy use so that it can more successfully breed. This is one of the reasons that they are not successfully coming off the endangered species list, because they're disturbed in areas like this. It's been proven up and down the coast, and it's largely people and dogs. And I also want to comment that the staff report went on to describe that over the last two-year period where we were trying to hold the county's feet to the fire on this, that really it had not quite 100% succeeded. Yeah, there was some comment that there had been improvements made, but it really hadn't succeeded. Then it moved right straight to, we do need to dredge and therefore we should approve a new lease. Kind of skipped a point of what happened to why things haven't succeeded. And I do want to address the comment that things have gotten better. That really doesn't make any difference here. It only takes a couple, maybe two or three noisy, loud, rambunctious dogs in that river channel to chase the terns off. We've gone down, we watched it, we watched it early in the morning before the enforcement gets there, and even before Newport Beach does their enforcement. Agreed that both agencies have tried to make some improvements, but they're there, not always at the right time. Busy, hot days, there's people that are from sun up to sundown, there's enforcement there very briefly. And you can watch the birds leave immediately, so they're not staying in there. And getting an improvement, whatever they think the improvement is, there's people here that disagree that there's been any improvement, but even if there has been some improvement, if we went from 35 to 40 dogs down to 15 to 20, it doesn't matter. We need almost no dogs in that river channel to succeed. And to do that, we need consistent and robust enforcement. We're not getting it from the County of Orange. As people have said, maybe the sheriffs just aren't that interested in it. So agree with what everybody else has said. We need a third party or more robust enforcement and more pressure on the county to get that done. And simply signing the lease now or approving the lease now is not going to do that. We're going to continue on the way we were. So there's been a request for a 60-day period to ask the county to come up with alternatives. I make that same request. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Thomas. Michelle, anyone else?
Thank you. We have no other hands raised for comment at this time.
Great. Thank you very much. So I know Commissioner Kunkel has to abstain on this. And, you know, I think I'll just leave my comments very brief. I feel like this approach does strike the right balance. I know there's a lot of competing factors and considerations, and it's a challenging site to manage. But I do think the staff report does attempt to strike the right balance here. So we have a motion from Commissioner Miller, a second from Commissioner Dumlau. And may we have the roll call vote, please?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunkel.
Abstain.
Commissioner Miller. Aye. Chair Dumlau.
Aye.
The motion passes 2-0 with one abstention. And if I may,
yes,
Chair.
Please.
I just want to express that we will continue as a staff to work with the Coastal Commission and our partners at Fish and Wildlife and the state parks to find a solution that where the state can play more of a law enforcement role here so that it won't change. We will continue to try to crack that net.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. All right, moving on to item 50. May we have the presentation for item 50?
Yes. Item 50 is to consider acceptance of the final report and closing statement for the Long Beach Unit Annual Plan, July 1st, 2022 through June 30th, 2023. This Long Beach Unit is located in the city of Long Beach offshore, contains the four oil islands within Los Angeles County. So every year, the city submits basically a true-up of the actual expenditures and costs and revenues that were generated through the previous fiscal year. And that is compared to the annual plan and the program plan that is submitted, developed by the city and submitted to the State Lands Commission. So essentially, as we've talked before, the annual plan and the program plan is the yearly budget and the strategic plan for the operations of the Long Beach unit. This final report is basically the actual costs and expenditures and revenues that were generated pursuant to those plans and that budget. I want to highlight and emphasize that pursuant to the statutory framework and the various agreements that flow from the statutory framework governing the Long Beach unit, the State Lands Commission does not have discretionary action as it relates to this final report. The most we can do is accept it for filing. And that is exactly what staff's recommendation is. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Commissioner Kunkel, do you have any questions? Commissioner Miller?
I don't have any questions, but happy to move approval.
Great. And Michelle, do we have any people wishing to speak on item 50?
Yes. Our first speaker is Anna Christensen. And you may unmute yourself and begin your comment.
If I may, sorry, Anna, I'd like to limit public comments for this item to 2 minutes, just given the hour.
Okay, man. Are you ready?
We're ready.
Okay, this is a 3-minute comment. I got it down. Wait a minute. I don't know how I could do it for two. Hold on a minute. Don't start my timing. I can't. What did this do? This, you filled my screen and I can't leave my comment. How did that happen? Now, here it goes. Okay, sorry about that. I would like to point out that where the staff said the most you can do is receive and file it, but you don't have to. All right, here you go. The commission should not accept this report and is not required to do so. Staff states that commission action is not required. It is the city of Long Beach that has requested the commission's acceptance of this report. Sierra Club finds that the following statements made in the report and by State Lands Commission are not accurate. The city writes that the program was implemented while maintaining focus on health, environment, and safety. However, this is not true. The city operated wells within the 3,200-foot health and safety setback zone and contributed to local and global pollution by optimizing production, including drilling new wells. The staff says that because it's an administrative action that will not result in direct or indirect physical changes to the environment, it is not a project as defined by CEQA. However, acceptance of the report would be a project under CEQA because it has consequences that will result in physical changes. A report that fails to acknowledge that drilling for oil has, does, and will impact the climate and environment for the worse perpetuates these direct and indirect physical changes. Letters from both the city and California Resources Corporation use the language of Wall Street. The development program was optimized for capital investment, cash flows, and commodity market volatility. Clearly making money is the primary focus, regardless of the consequences. The city argues it's their special relationship with the state that obliges them to continue drilling. State Lands Commission must respond to this claim by exercising its power to regulate, reduce, and end its oil operations, both in Long Beach and throughout the state. We would point out that the true costs, if properly calculated, would not result in a profit for either the city or the state. The annual net profit of $180 million comes at the expense of people's health, lost wages, and shortened lives. We ask that the State Lands Commission acknowledge that the financial gain from extracting oil and gas on public trust lands must end. Don't accept the report, please.
Thank you, Ms. Christensen. Michelle, do we have anyone else?
Yes, we do have Ann Contrell signed up to speak on this item. However, we do not see them on the attendees list. If you are calling in, please raise your hand so we can identify you and allow you to make your comment now. I do not see any hands raised at this time, and we do not have any other hands raised for public comment right now.
All right. I will be abstaining from this item. Any other comments before we move on to the...
Yes. I just wanted to say that the controller continues to be concerned about the impacts of oil and gas drilling, particularly the social costs of extracting oil and gas. We know that there is a measurable health impact and economic impact to communities, particularly poor communities, that we need to acknowledge. In the same vein, at the same time, we're just acknowledging this, that we've received this report, correct?
That's correct.
So I will second the motion to move that. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. So we have a motion from Commissioner Miller, seconded by Commissioner Kunkel. May we have the roll call vote?
Certainly. Commissioner Kunkel.
Aye.
Commissioner Miller.
Aye.
Chair Dumoulin.
Abstain.
The motion passes with 2-0 with one abstention.
All right. Well, what is the next order of business,
Ms. Our next order of business is our second public comment period.
Great. Thank you. If anyone wants to address the commission on any item that was not on today's agenda, this is your time. Please come to the podium or raise your hand on Zoom. I'd also like to just given the hour limit, public comment to 1 minute for each person. So please be brief if you can. Michelle, do we have anyone wishing to speak in person?
We do not have anyone in person to make a comment, but we do have someone calling in.
Okay.
Okay, the phone number ending in 421, you may begin your comment now. Please unmute yourself.
Phone number 421, are you there? Okay. Michelle, any indication that this person is trying to do anything?
They are not unmuting themselves, but they did recently raise their hand. Outside of the phone number ending in 421, we have no other comments at this moment.
Okay. Well, I don't think we're going to be able to get you. So our apologies for not being able to hear your public comment. But tune into our next meeting and hopefully you can share your comments then. Let's see. Michelle, that concludes our second public comment period. Do any of the commissioners have any other comments or questions? And that concludes the open meeting. We are adjourned.